inhuman of African and other people as a consequence of its existence. Stealing black labor, black bodies, black territory off the rape of Asia, Latin America, etc. It's a rotten, foul social system. That's the world we live in. And if you raise the question of reparations, it makes it necessary for African people to come to terms with this. So much is done against us all the time. Demoralizing black people. You took my money, you took my resources, you stole every damn thing we got, I want it.
Solidarity Not Charity is hosted by the African People's Solidarity Committee. We thank the African People's Socialist Party for allowing us this time on UhuruRadio.com. The African People's Solidarity Committee is an organization of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party that leads the Uhuru movement for the liberation of Africa and African people all over the world. Solidarity Not Charity invites other white people to participate in this discussion about why it is in our truest interest to stand in solidarity with the movement for the liberation of African people everywhere. We recognize that peace and security on this planet will never be possible without justice and liberation for African and all oppressed peoples.
Uhuru! And welcome to Solidarity Not Charity on UhuruRadio.com. My name is Harris Daniels. I'm a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where we're broadcasting from today, this Sunday afternoon. This show, of course, is the show of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, where we discuss matters as they relate to North Americans and our responsibility in supporting the struggle of African and other oppressed and colonized people to exercise self-determination, regain control of their resources, and win the struggle for liberation on their terms. And we work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party. I would like to thank them and appreciate this time on UhuruRadio.com. And we are having a great discussion today about reparations and a really active movement of reparations, specifically in the case of the burning and the riots of Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. We're going to be talking live with Eddie Faye Gates, who's an activist and a spokesperson for the Tulsa Reparations Coalition. And she'll be on the show today to represent the movement of African people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who are fighting for reparations for the survivors and families of the vibrant, successful African community that was known as the Black Wall Street of Tulsa, the Greenwood area in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was bombed and burned by white mobs in a white nationalist attack and by the government in 1921. She's the author of a cultural autobiography and two books on the history of African people in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The books are They Came Searching, How Blacks Sought the Promised Land in Tulsa, which provides a general background on African heritage, slavery, the Civil War, Reconstruction, and post-Reconstruction black migrations, as well as accounts from present-day Tulsa pioneers between ages 69 and 104 on their experience during Tulsa's early history, and including some of the firsthand accounts of the Tulsa race riot of 1921. And she also has a book called Riot on Greenwood, The Total Destruction of the Black Wall Street, where she compiled the largest collection of survivor stories to appear in one volume. And also, she has compiled a book that was a cultural autobiography, which I mentioned. And we'll be discussing that and other work that Mrs. Gates has done on today's show. So first of all, I'd like to welcome, and I have to say it's a great honor to have you on the show, Mrs. Gates. Uhuru, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here. I have the reputation of speaking to a brick wall, if I think it will help. So I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. Can you hear me? Yeah, we really appreciate just the fact that you know, you can be on the show to represent a real active movement of reparations and provide for us background on what is little taught in schools about the history of Tulsa and the attack on Tulsa in 1921.
It was covered up for 75 years, deliberately covered up. And but it's out now, and if we're getting the word out, it's all over the world now. I've given talks in Jerusalem, Israel, Warsaw, Poland, London, England, all over Europe, Africa. So everywhere I go, people are just curious to know what caused it, why did it happen, what can we do to repair and restore, what can we do to teach our youth. And that's what I do. That's why I'm so delighted you asked me to be on this radio show.
Great, thank you. And first of all, we just wanted to get a little background about you and what your connection is to the African community in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Well, I was born and raised in Preston, which is a little village, a little farming village about 40 miles south of Tulsa. So I'm very familiar with Tulsa. I had relatives who lived here in Tulsa. I was the oldest of eight children that were raised by my parents in Preston. But we have relatives living right here in Tulsa, and they were well off. They were teachers, and one was married to a lawyer. And they were well off, and their homes were some of those first destroyed on Detroit. No, that's where my relatives lived. So I heard about this from the time I could, you know, could walk and talk and listen. So I was just curious, always been a curious child, loved learning. And my mother taught me my first book, Miss Lucy's Cookies. That's the autobiography. It's really a memoir. It's not an autobiography. It's a memoir. It's my story, but I also go further than that. It's every black person's story, wherever they live, because all of us have had similar experiences. All cultures profess profound beliefs in their whoever they worship, for God or whatever they call a supreme being, or they stress great love of their country and respect for its constitution and its laws. They all profess that. And yet in all cultures there have been some who forgot about those religious beliefs and those good secular beliefs because they wanted something that belonged to someone else. So that's what all three of my books are about, the whole world and how some people did not live up to their religious beliefs, if they had them, or their secular beliefs that had great constitutions and things in them. Yet they allowed themselves to take from others, and the slave trade is an example of that. And they created justification for it. They would, you know, make an enemy, make this person less than human. And so that's just typical all over the world. But no country has a worse image about slavery than the United States of America, and things are changing. In fact, I just have an article out of a paper a day or two ago about how it's changing, things changing. And they are changing, but we still have a long way to go. There was so much harm and damage done through these two things, the lack of following your religious beliefs, the lack of following your secular documents, which, you know, stress the right of all human beings. And so we're dealing with that. But it is getting better. I do give them credit for that. But we still have a long way to go. That's why I welcome programs like yours. And
well,
I can tell you how I did my research if you want to know about that. Oh, you ask about the Riot Commission. We had five black lawmakers in the Oklahoma legislature. And I do give the Oklahoma legislature credit for opening up this, which had been covered for 75 years, opening this up. Those five blacks couldn't have done this without the support of the whole state of Oklahoma's legislature. So I'm grateful that they finally acknowledged, that's the first step, when something has been wrong like this, acknowledge the wrongdoing, try to get to the root of it, who was harmed, try to get back to restitution, all going back to ancient biblical days, all the way through Egypt and Roman civilization. All there's been a basic belief that if someone has been harmed, the person tries to restore, repair, restitution to as normal a state as possible. That was just ignored by us until the civil rights movement of the 60s. So That's where all of my research, and I was put on this commission. Don Ross, Representative Don Ross, Senator Maxine Horner were two of the five black legislators. They introduced this bill to examine that riot that caused so much damage, that just totally destroyed Black Wall Street. And Oklahoma was ready to face it at that time. Now, there was a lot of objections, but they did manage to get the law passed, created a commission to study the Tulsa Race Riot of 1921. You're right, it's not a riot, but since that was in that's what the lawmakers wrote when they were producing the bill, that's why I refer to it. It really was a massacre. A riot means different sides arming themselves and fighting a war. This was not that. It was secretive. It was destruction deliberately planned and just destroyed a group of people who didn't even know it was coming, didn't see the ball coming till it hit. So that's what my three books are about. That's why I had written the books, and they knew about my research, knew that I had lived in, my late husband was military, and we had lived almost 7 years in England. I travel all over Europe. So Liverpool, England is the place to go if you want to look up at the slave trade. Liverpool was the last thing before they crossed over in Ireland and then on to Newfoundland and then to Americas. That Liverpool, England has the best documents. So my second book is based on that. They came to my first one, my private story, poverty, barefoot sharecroppers' kids, but parents who stressed education, who stressed values, the whole community raised us, and they told us, we said, mother said, college, I'm the oldest of eight, eight of the ten who survived, and mother said, you're going to college, and we said, mother, how can we go? We're sharecroppers, we pick cotton, we're barefoot. She said, you get the grades, God will open the way, and mother was right. That little woman with a sixth grade education, and she's featured in the Oklahoma 100th Centennial because they asked 50 of us authors to write a story about some woman who helped and made an impression. I wrote about Mother daring to tell us eight barefoot kids we were going to college. She was right. God did open the way. All eight of us have at least BS degrees, four masters, my daughter, PhD. I don't brag. I'm just saying what you can do. PhD, University right. of California, Berkeley, works at the Livermore Lab. We only have two in the nation, those nuclear labs. She has worked at Oak Ridge. Now she's at Lawrence Livermore. I have spoken there. The point I'm making is you have to have somebody give you the belief that you aren't this inferior person, that you aren't somebody who deserves not to be recognized. And that's why I'm so proud of this first book of mine. It's about people, communities, telling us little barefoot children what we can do. And we did it. So that's why I'm so proud of being asked to be on commissions. That's why Representative Ross recommended me for the commission. He knew me through my teaching. I had brought groups of students to the local government. I brought them to the state capitol, even took them to the federal government on close-up program. So that's how I got on the commission. There were 11 of us, six blacks, five whites. Three of the blacks had PhDs. I have enough hours for a PhD. I need to go to Mexico and finish my research and get mine. But we were trained. We knew what we were talking about. This commission was validated, and we had white lawmakers on there, and they were doing their best to look at this thing that had been covered up. We worked together beautifully. We naturally had our own backgrounds and had our own, you know, how your environment reflects on how you think. But we got along. We examined 20,000 documents, and each year the American Library Association chooses one state-published document to be the document of the year. And we won that year, 2001, our research. So that's why I go by that research. Our research. We did our work, and we found and we told the story for the first time. We got death threats. Don Ross got death threats. I got Vivian Clark Adams, who wore her hair cut short, and they called her. They didn't like her. They thought she was one of those California hippies, and So we got some threatening calls, but we stuck with it. I knew God was on our side. He would bless us. Our husbands got a little afraid and kind of wanted us to drop out. We said, no, God chose us for this mission. God will take care of us. And he did. Not anyone was hurt. Don Ross was run off the road one night, but he managed to remain safe. So that's what we did, that $20,000. You can pull that document up on the website. Also, let me give you my website right now, www.tulsa-riot.com. And you can see pictures. You can see what I talked about in those books. You can see the connections that we're making today, like the 100th Centennial, having these black women featured in it. We have come a long way. It was a long struggle. It was brought about all of those heroes we hear about, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, all of the people who shed blood, lost lives. They helped to bring us to where we are today. So we are making progress. That is why I'm so glad you asked about the three books and mentioned them, because the first one gives faith and hope. And I speak free of charge to schools, give boxes of books to the students. I'm not after the money. I want to get the message out. Of course, God blesses me. Love is reflected in love. I get more book sales than I ever thought I would ever get. But the point is I'm trying to help our people.
If we could just draw upon some of your vast research here about Tulsa, and in particular the Greenwood attacks in 1921. You had mentioned also that growing up, the community took care of the child.
Yes.
In your research about Greenwood and Tulsa and the African community there, it's clear that there were some who did have great wealth and others that were less well off. But there was really a spirit that every family, and especially every child, was taken care of. Could you tell us something about the spirit of Greenwood?
Oh, yes. It was that spirit the teachers gave us, the people in the community, even the people who were not educated in farm. We were taught to respect them. They had something to share with us. They were grown-ups. They loved us. The little sisters at church took care of making sure you learned how to behave. If you didn't, you got the evil eye, and you got a spanking when you got home. And the whole community just took over and took on the duty of taking care of the children, bringing them to a better place than they had had. So, and Tulsa was unique in that some of the people were very wealthy. As I mentioned, those relatives I had, others of that same family were not well off, like my dad's. But everybody was taught that they were worth somebody. The teachers were wonderful, the teachers in those days. Everybody just took a turn at helping these children to know that they could get out of it. And so many of them did. There was just lots of wealth in the Greenwood area. In fact, if you read about Columbus and all, you'll notice that the blacks were the first here. They already owned everything, all the crops that they brought over. Everything here was brought over by the Africans before the Europeans came. Now, that's not in your history books. It's finally getting there because commissions like ours found the material and made it acceptable. But all of the people helped. And so Greenwood was just a booming place. Now, it wasn't all perfect. It had your good, your bad, and ugly. The good was these people who saved their money and Booker T. Washington was the one that named it Black Wall Street. He came in 1915 to talk to the Black Business Bureau. And he was so impressed, he said, this is a virtual Black Wall Street, and the name stuck. And so there were those, and then there were those who were not so well off. But they were eking out a living, and they were doing the manual work and so forth. And there was a lot of jealousy of these that had the wealth. Now, I'm not saying that all the blacks were perfect. There were also lots of interracial sexual conduct that led to lynchings. And there was some, bad and ugly in all groups. But the wealth was there, and it irritated some people. They just said, in fact, I have interviewed, in my interviews, I've talked to whites. I have a whole chapter in the book, Good White Samaritans, because they were embarrassed and ashamed of what had happened, what part of their race had done. They wanted to to get the true story out. And they talk about, some of them said they knew people, they heard, some of these people now in their 80s and 90s heard people say, those niggas have better things than we have. And so they put little notes on the door, get out by a certain date. So this was planned, we know, deliberately planned. And my folks got out. My mother and her dad and my mother's parents got the children together, and they moved to Okmulgee, which is 47 miles south of here, because they had the little note put on their door, get out by a certain date. That was the 31st, get out or else. And so that's what happened. The riot occurred. It was planned. It was deliberate. It was evil, hatred, jealousy, lack of respect for human beings who had earned that. And so that was the cause of it, the destruction. You can just pull up the website or just pull up my website and any other books. Go to any library. You'll find this. And the information we uncovered, we examined 20,000 documents. We studied for 4 years. And so nobody can deny that this happened. And the main thing is we have the oral interviews of the living survivors. And if they have passed on, I had 312. That's how many I had. Now we're down to, I say 72. I think I'm going to have to take it down to 69. There are two in Detroit when I gave a talk there. Joanne Watson had me talk to their council. There are two I cannot locate in Detroit, and we think they have passed on. So from 312 who lived through it, we've got more than that in descendants, people who are descendants. And the law that we, the commission did ask for immediate reparations for the survivors and then reparations for the descendants. So there are two stages to this, and we're waiting. Of course, we want to definitely get the survivors paid first before they pass on. But the descendants are waiting in line, and they have a right to it. Some people are like, well, we don't have the money. We didn't do it. Of course you didn't. And nobody's saying you did. We're just saying our country did. And if you're part of a country, they take responsibility. And so that's where we stand on that commission report. It's lots of hard work, but we did our very best. And we know it's based on fact. And it has held up. I have gone to Washington, D.C. while we were turned down at the state level, the city level first. Just broke my heart when my city said no to those little survivors. They were all out in the audience. Dr. Charles Ogletree, our lead attorney, Johnny Cochran was alive then, was here that first when we filed it. It was wonderful. We have about 16 or 17 of the outstanding lawyers in the world, and they were all here, and I couldn't believe it when our city of Tulsa didn't deny that it happened, but that the time had run out. It should have been filed within 3 years, the lawsuit. And then we went on to Oklahoma, to the 10th Circuit Court, and we went to Oklahoma City, and they said, no, good case, but you should have filed within 3 years. Went to the U.S. Supreme Court. I stood out in that cold weather, tried to keep those little survivors warm. We actually had buses come to let them sit on the buses so they wouldn't have to stand out in the snow while their case was being given to the U.S. Supreme Court. We were there that cold day, and we were there when we went back for the hearing on the decision. And I wept tears as I've never wept before. I could not believe our U.S. Supreme Court would say no. Didn't say it wasn't a good case. Didn't say it didn't happen exactly the way our commission said it did, but said the time should have been filed within 3 years. And we just wept and talked to reporters. I said, how could it be 3 years? I'll show you what happened. We had little pictures, little TVs all over the room showing what happened. Hanging, 14-year-old boy. The mother hanging, a little tiny boy was left, and he was walking over a bridge over some water, and he was about to fall in, the little black boy, because his mother's hanging, his sister and brothers are hanging, and this little baby nearly drowned, nearly fell in. A good white Samaritan grabbed that baby and raised him as his own. That's in my book. Read the book, Ride on Greenwood. You can read that story. But I was just shocked when our whole nation said, took the way out that it had to have been filed within that 3 years. Well, that's been changed. I've been to Washington, D.C. three times. We've met with the Conyers and a bunch of people, and some of the whites are just as supportive as the blacks. One young guy from Georgia is so active. He's white. He has wept and apologized for his state and is working very hard. So right now we are waiting on, they finally said we will remove that. They should have filed in 3 years. They couldn't have at that time. That has been removed. I was in Washington, D.C. when that happened. We wept tears of joy. So that's where we stand today. Yes, they wiped out Greenwood. Yes, there was envy, hatred. No, we cannot. For a long time, they didn't wouldn't pay reparations. They said you have to have death certificates. You have to have a coroner's report. We didn't have that. That's what we told them, because they were not given proper funerals. Whites were. Blacks were dumped in the river, buried in Dawson, a well in Dawson, right over here near where I live, under Sears Roebuck's. There's a burial under there. The City Hall, our City Hall downtown, graves were found when they were not graves, but bodies were found. We know where they are. We know what happened, but people have been ignoring it. But thank God they don't ignore it anymore. John Conyers and the rest of that committee did pass a law. We were there. We wept and hugged each other, and thank God no longer will we have to deal with that. We did have to go through the Organization of American States when we exhausted everything in the U.S. We went there. Dr. Ogletree will not stop. And the law team until they get justice. The OAS did acknowledge us and did recognize us. It's a fascinating story. We've had wonderful support. Wonderful support. I've got pictures taken with Barack Obama, and he's holding up one of my books. He is so proud of what we did in Tulsa to get the story out. And they promised us they would do something, and they did. It is now... We got through the Organization of American States, which is in Costa Rica. But because of the survivors' age, we didn't have to go to Costa Rica. They came to us. And we met down there in 2006. Just it's not been long. And that was all brought to a head when they passed the law, taking that out that they should have filed in 3 years, if that was the holdup. That is no longer the holdup. They are now working on the bill. They told the people who were there that day, and I don't expect your $50 billion tomorrow, but it's coming. They said, we're going to follow the same rules we did with Rosewood. When they had, it was small, and they paid for theirs, we're going to follow that. Same provision with the Japanese Americans who were wronged, and they got their justification. They got their reparation. Same thing with Wilmington, North Carolina, and other places that had similar things, but they gave their survivors reparations. So that's where we stand today. It's been a long journey, covered up by our own people who were ashamed or afraid, but it has finally opened up. And we can thank Representative Don Ross for the opening up. He just never would shut up. He wanted to know what happened, who did it, why did they do it, what can we do about it. And I'm so grateful that he appointed me to that committee. He had worked with me through schools and knew that I cared. And he said, she will do it. If she only death will keep her from doing what she promises to do. And so that's what we have done. And right now we're waiting for the final justice. It's too late for many of the little survivors. But they said, I'm glad it's gotten this far. At least they're acknowledging that what they did to us was wrong to do to human beings. So most of them died feeling at least some acknowledgement, and they would be so pleased if they could be here today and see how it's progressing today.
Well, we'll get back to this discussion in just a moment.
All right.
You're listening to Solidarity Not Charity on UhuruRadio.com, the show of the African People's Solidarity Committee. Our guest today is Eddie Faye Gates, who is spokesperson for the Tulsa, Oklahoma Reparations Coalition, fighting and winning in some areas the work to get reparations for the survivors and their descendants of the 1921 white nationalist terror and attacks on the African Economic Independent Community of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You can listen to Uhuru Radio on your phone at 425-905-1825. If you want to participate in this discussion, if you have a question for Mrs. Gates, you can call 727-565-1599. That's 727-565-1599 to get a question on the air. Or you could email us at dj@uhururadio.com. That's dj@uhururadio.com. You're listening to uhururadio.com. This is Solidarity Not Charity. And we're speaking with Eddie Faye Gates from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we are talking about the so-called riots, but really the white nationalist and U.S. government attacks on the African community in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. And Mrs. Gates, you've done a lot of research, really speaking with eyewitness accounts and collecting eyewitness accounts of the African community of Tulsa. We've talked about how the environment there was one where people felt like they were taken care of in a community, whether wealthy or not wealthy, and there was a lot of economically viable independence in the African community and a lot of white resentment and hatred. But what was the initial attack that provoked what eventually burned down the community in 1921? Tell us a bit of the background on the attacks. Hello? Mrs. Gates, are you still with us? We may have a technical difficulty. If we'll just check for a second here if we still have Mrs. Eddie Faye Gates on the line. Well, we are talking about the 1921 attacks on the African community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's of particular significance to our show, Solidarity Not Charity, because we have to understand our history in the United States and the relationship between North Americans who benefit economically from the oppression and downright terroristic attacks by the government and by regular white people in the form of lynchings, in the form of burnings and bombings. We're going to be talking about the attacks on the Greenwood area of Tulsa in 1921, in which the first aerial bombing in the country, in the U.S., occurred on the high-rise buildings of the Black Wall Street. Mrs. Gates, could you tell us about that attack?
Oh, yes, yes. That has been just fascinating. That has caused so much heartache in Tulsa. Some of the whites, I've got good whites in America. They wept when they told me because they had parents who were involved. We did clear up some clarification. Tulsa was noted as the only city to bomb where the military bombed its own people. Those were not military planes. We did find out who the planes were. We know who was piloting them. We did have to change a lot of things. Some streets names were changed because they were named for people who did some of this bombing, military did not do that. It was the Tulsa police chief had a plane, and he did drop incendiary devices. We also do not call it bombs. We call it incendiary devices. They made some kind of... We've got an expert, a chemical expert, who told us what they think it was, made of whooshing sound and bright lights and very terrible. Some of them, one of them, just out of hatred, dropped one of those things on a little old man who had no legs. His legs did not develop, so he went around on a little cart, and they just took delight in dropping an incendiary device on that poor little man, and he died instantly. But we do know there was bombing. Yes, yes, they did drop incendiary devices. They did kill people. But it wasn't the military. So we cleared up some things. Some things we cleared up that people didn't want cleared up. You had to, that commission required that if anybody had any information that would help this mandated commission, they had to give it to us. And we had to pull the extreme. They told all of us, if somebody does not give you information you think would help, let us know and we will They can go to jail if they don't. I had to use that two or three times. Bell Telephone Company did not want to let me see their records. Bell cut off the telephone lines. That's why there were so many deaths, burnings, and stabbings, and all that kind of thing in the black community. They had no phone way to call. The fire department did not come in to put out fires. We've got those. Not want to give me information. Telephone comes. That wasn't our phone come. I said, I have the records. I've seen them with my own eyes. They were. W.T. Brady's wife has the Ku Klux, granddaughter owns the Ku Klux Klan rolls. I had trouble getting that. But I told her, well, I'll have to call Representative Ross. It's against the law to withhold this from us. Miss Gates, come on up. So we had to fight just tooth and nail to look at those documents. I can see why they are really condemning, with your own police chief flying a plane, dropping, with some of the Ku Klux Klan leaders who were fighting right then and there, and killing and burying people who dared to stand up to the Klan. Some of their names on the list. I even had a lawmaker call once, and he's told me what he wanted. He wanted me to check the list. Was his grandfather's name on it? And I checked the list, and his grandfather's name was. I never gave that to anyone. I always keep that confidential. That lawmaker wept like a baby, and I comforted him. I said, you didn't do it. You're not responsible. You are responsible for getting the truth out, trying to help those who are living, trying to help schools and other places. And parenting, you are responsible for us trying to raise a generation that will never do that again. And he felt better and thanked me so much for that. So we had all kinds of things like that. We had to fight like the devil to even get to look at the documents. I can see why. Do you know who brought the one reason there's so many deaths in Greenwood? Boy Scouts helped to come into Tulsa. Blacks were holding on very well, especially World War One soldiers who brought back weapons, and they were standing up on top of the churches, church steeples and things. But the whites had Boy Scouts in uniforms come in, and those people were just too soft-hearted. They could not shoot at those scouts. So that's how they got into Tulsa. Using Boy Scouts. Wow. I was so embarrassed. The Scouts, they didn't want to let me see the record. I said, I will call Representative Ross. It's against the law to withhold. Before I could get on the phone, come and get the records. And they proved everything that people had told me and everything I had read. So we did our work, and we found what happened, the good, the bad, the ugly. There were good white Samaritans who risked their lives to come in and to take the people out that they knew or worked with. One story was a little old white man who is elderly now, and he was 6 years old at the time. They went in the truck to pick up the little lady that worked for them, and she wouldn't come because there was somebody else. She said, I won't go. That little old lady there lives alone. She has nobody. I will not get in that truck. And the man said, come on. Bullets were dropping and everything. He said, come on, get in. She said, I'm not leaving that little woman. He said, okay, we'll squeeze her in. And some kind of way they squeezed that little lady in. There's so many sweet stories, so many that will just break your heart. They're so atrocious. But it happened, and we have to face it. And we did. And that's where we are today. I do think this restitution is coming. It's a long time coming, and many have passed on. But it will go to their offspring, and at least it will be recognized and acknowledged that a wrong was done to human beings who should not have suffered that. And we know why it was done, the greed. We know who did it. Some high-ranking people were in on it. We know all that. We've had to, as I said before, we've had to change street names. We've had to, we just had to do all that. So are there any other questions?
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Uhura.
Uhura.
Uhura, this is Allie. I'm in the African People's Solidarity Committee in Philadelphia, and I just really wanted to call in and express a lot of appreciation for Mrs. Gates for just an incredible interview, and just say what an incredible example of courage and struggle that you set in the African community. And as a white person, I just wanted to ask you, you know, I've read some about Tulsa, and I can't wait to get your books and study it more, because, like you say, this is the hidden history of African people in this country. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say, I'd seen a film recently, a documentary called Banished, and I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Well, it just documents a small amount, some other towns where this kind of terror was carried out in a smaller way, smaller scale, obviously, but the whole towns were chased out. Africans were completely mm-hmm. banished from the towns mm-hmm. through this kind of terror, and it just really made me understand that, you know, it must have happened so many places in this country, you know, to destroy the economy, to destroy, you know, what African people had built up, flourishing communities. And I just wondered if you, you know, had heard about other places or knew how widespread this was.
Exactly. I've spoken at some. Wilmington, North Carolina, mm-hmm. St. Louis, Missouri, Detroit, Michigan. Oh, they had a terrible thing there. But yes, there have been many places they had. The reason Tulsa was so significant is that it was so deliberately planned. You know, you had mm-hmm. your leaders in it, and the airplanes, and it was just so carefully planned. And it was also, it's the largest, you know, we had more deaths, thousands. We officially used the 312 because we can prove that. We do have some documents, and we came upon those because God meant us to have them. They were repairing a police station, and inside they found the documents they'd hidden, the ones that listed the deaths of the, we've got 312 deaths listed, and we only have two graves for blacks in our whole cemetery. If you pull up my website, you will see that. My late husband and I are leaning down by the two blacks, the only two blacks in that whole big cemetery that have graves. None of the rest. But anyway, it's just wonderful that people do want to do the right thing. And then there were those who wanted to do the right thing. There were good people then, good whites, good people. One of my favorite is a little lady, the son of this couple, this man was a fireman, and this lady, the wife, these people are friends of mine. They work with me, and they help me do my research, and I won't call their names, but they're in the book. The fireman, the dad was a fireman, and the mother, the dad was a racist. He was a racist fireman. This person who helps me and who's part of our commission helped with that, and who wept when he talked about it. I just told him, I hugged him and said, don't hold it against. That was just a mindset. He didn't know any better, and you do now. But here's the interesting thing. The dad was a fireman, would not go in, wouldn't cross these lines, but take care of the whites, wouldn't go in to help the blacks. His wife was the total opposite. They had originally come from north, but he was from the Oklahoma area and was racist. The little wife is one of my favorite people in my book, her picture. She's there with her little broom. She was out sweeping. And they were herding up women. A lot of these women worked, and they were maids in this Brady district. And she was out sweeping her sidewalk. And these men were harassing these black ladies, taking them and putting them, just throwing them in vans, fixing to take them to jail. And this little Molly had her long dress. Her picture's in my book, The Ride on Greenwood book. It's the cutest picture. She took her broom and went out there and shook it at these people and told them, let these ladies alone. I know them. They work here. They work for people. I know them. She shook her broom at those guards, and they didn't want to hurt this little woman, so they left those women alone. She took those women into her house and put them down in the basement, and she hid them. She hid them just so that no other group would come through and take them, and God knows what would happen to it. So Molly is one of my favorite people. She shook her broom with those people and ran them off. And also, she had made a great cake that day. Her husband had left that morning, and she was making a cake, and it was smelling good. And he was a fireman coming in that evening. And he got back, and, where is the cake? She said, what cake? And I know I smell cake this morning. And what happened was those ladies that she had helped ate up that cake. So he never did. But years later, she finally told him what happened to the cake. But there were good stories like that. There were people who risked their lives to help. They're some of the most atrocious stories I've ever heard of. So we just have to know it was the good, it was the bad, it was the ugly. And what we're dealing with now, I'm so grateful that we are going to get these little people get their reparations, their restitution made whole again, like those others. There are many others. I've studied many of them. St. Louis, some of the people have come here to visit me because they wanted to share. One reason all of those places got the city took care of it, they were small. They were so small. This was so huge, so large. That's why we had to fight so long. So, yes, I'm very familiar with many, many others. Of just you name it, I have studied it. I've visited some of them, have been invited as guests to speak in some of them. But I'm very familiar with those. But they were small and easier to rectify.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes,
I think all the cases, too, to show that all white people did benefit from this and have benefited from African people,
exactly.
You know, from the labor of African people and from the attacks on African people and stealing all their resources. So, you know, I just think it's very moving for us to hear this. And from the white community, we work, you know, for reparations for all African people, for, you know, from all the white community, because this case and so many others, this whole history, you know, shows us, everything that you're saying shows us that we all owe reparations to African people, and this movement gives us an opportunity to do that, so we really thank you.
You're welcome. In fact, I might just say most of the financial support for the Africans, not for the descendants and victims, have come from white organizations. So I can truthfully say they have been wonderful. We have religious groups. I just spoke at one at church recently. They have just been, they open up their hearts to these people. So most of the donations have come from whites. So it's just heartwarming to know that they didn't do it. They're not responsible, but they care that human beings are treated that way, and they're doing something about it. So I'm very pleased with people like you who don't have to do it. You do it because your heart tells you it's the right thing to do. And I'm so pleased with that kind of response.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Thank you, caller. We do have an email call. Not a call, an email question.
Okay.
Uh-huh. This is from Roosevelt King in Barbados. And he says, there are some defenses to time. When does time begin to run, and when does it end? If you had to do research to find the facts then, even though time had passed, it could only start to run when you come to know. An act committed against a child does not stop the child from pursuing justice when he or she comes of age and knows and understands what happened. So was this principle taken into consideration by the court in Tulsa, and was it raised that there really isn't a statute of limitations on such a heinous attack?
That's what the law, that's what took Conyers in the law so long, because they kept bringing up that toll, T-O-L-L. You should have filed. That was the law. If we cannot violate, we can't break a law. I think it was just a cop-out, but that has been removed now. That law that they passed, Conyers and got to, that law, which had much support of whites, it couldn't have passed without the white support. And that law took away that toll that you should have filed within. The reason they examined, they said there's no way these people could have filed in that 3-year period. They were being lynched. They had no legal rights. Just to say they wanted their rights was a death, you know, just submitting to death. So, yes, there's a way to get those kind of things off the books, but it's very, very difficult. And it took all of this time for us, all those times I just mentioned. But they finally got that off the books, stating that there is no way these people could have filed in that 3-year period. It would have been an automatic death. Why would you file if you knew that you would be killed? So It took a long time, but they finally did acknowledge that there was no way these people could have filed in that 3-year period. That's why it was removed from the books, and that's where we stand today. So we are working toward reparation. Some of the people are very sad that some of their relatives and friends didn't live to see it. Others said, I never cared about the money anyway. I live fine. I don't want much, but I just want them to acknowledge it. They said, acknowledgement is healing. It will help them. It will help the nation feel better. Acknowledgement, then dealing with those who lost, restitution, they have a right to that. They have a right, the descendants have a right. We have a policy of the children reaping from the sweat of their ancestors' brow. And so that's where we're headed right today. And I think it's going to come sooner than we thought. I don't think we'll have to wait another 20 years or so. I think it's going to come soon because we are in a stage of acknowledgement, apology, trying to rectify and repair and restore. And I think we're going to reach that.
Well, I have a last question for you, and I do appreciate everything that you've shared with us. I think we got a lot of background and understanding and clarity on the situation of Tulsa and where the reparations case is at. And as our caller, Allie, from the Solidarity Committee said, we all, as general members of the general white population, have a responsibility in making reparations. But I want to know, in your opinion, in our society, how can white people in particular just participate in ensuring that there will never be another Tulsa? Because there are still racial motivations for white nationalist attacks and certainly economic motivations. And we see the return of the noose this year with Gina and many incidents involving the noose and white nationalist attacks on African people. But what can we do, particularly under the leadership of African people, to ensure that there will never be another Tulsa attack?
I go back to what I've been doing since I was 5 years old, teaching. Reach the children. Teach. Education. And children are so receptive today. They just lap up what's good, and they want to be good and do. So I think the best thing, we're doing that too. Schools are making packets with putting books like mine in free, giving them, libraries are giving them, university professors are getting them. Teach the children, so you'll never have Boy Scouts leading in for lynching of people. Teach the children, they're so vulnerable, they're so sweet and so gentle and want to do the right thing. Work with the schools, start young. Families, be parents. Don't just send them off after school. Be parents. Talk to them. Oh, Lord, talk to the children. Get it in the books. Get it in your curriculum. And we had to fight hard to do that, but we did it, and the books are in libraries. I can't keep up with my books. I tell you who orders them the most are professors, especially university professors, who really just love the searching book, because I did that research in Liverpool. I actually saw the original documents. But reach the children. Reach the families. Families get together. Have cookouts and talk to your children and let them know how we must love one another. We must practice what our religion tells us. And tell the true history. Our history, I don't have time to go into it, but we had some lousy presidents since this is political time when we're talking. Even after the Tulsa riot, Warren Harding, Woodrow Wilson, they showed no interest at all. But despite the lynchings, we couldn't even get a lynching law, anti-lynching law passed. And that was all going on. You've got to get some committed political people in there who are working for all their citizens. And we're on that road too. We're doing much better now. But at that, I couldn't believe, even after the Tulsa riot massacre, do you know they still couldn't get an anti-lynching bill passed? Woodrow Wilson, Harding,
incredible.
They just showed no interest at all. Even after that, don't let our generations be like that. Teach them to have some feelings, and they will have it. Oh, that's my favorite thing to speak. To schools. I give away boxes of books. I don't try to sell them. I give them away. God blesses me by putting me up somewhere else where I can make a fortune. I don't try. I just happen to do that. But I will just give my books to schools. I will talk free at schools. That's what we have to do. And you whites have some of the best religious. I did a speech a couple of weeks ago at our Methodist, white Methodist women's group. They're wonderful. They are just loving those children, giving them what they need, telling them how important they are and what they can do. That's what we have to do. Don't ever raise up a generation who will be like Harding and Wilson and those kind of presidents were. Could not even get an anti-lynch. And I'm a Tuskegee. I attended Tuskegee in Alabama. But I've seen those records there describing the brutal lynchings, and it didn't ripple those presidents in one bit. So that's what we need to do. Insulate our people. Don't let them have hearts that can tolerate riots and unfairness, injustice, inhumanity. Work for a system that lives up to its spiritual principles, that practices its secular principles for all their people, not just for the rich, not just for the educated, but for every living human being. That's what we must do.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Mrs. Gates.
Oh, you're welcome.
Again, I want to appreciate you being on our show today.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I'm kind of overwhelmed and wiped out so much, but I love talking to genuine people like I've talked to today. Thank you for doing this. You are helping. Children are going to be better. There's going to be a better generation. They will not be like this past generation that could tolerate lynchings and riots and things. Our children are going to be better because of shows like yours, because of people like you. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Uhuru. So that is Eddie Faye Gates, representative, spokesperson of the Tulsa Reparations Coalition, speaking to us today on Solidarity Not Charity on uhururadio.com. To announce some of the events that are going on in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And in Oakland, California,
all we need is reparations. We don't need no explanations. We don't need no explanations. All we need is reparations. All we need.
Uhuru. Thanks again for listening to Solidarity Not Charity. We had a little bit of technical difficulties there. I just wanted to take the last couple minutes of the show to announce a couple events happening in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. There is a potluck and rally, Change the World, in Oakland, California on February 4th. That's tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Humanist Hall at 390 27th Street in Oakland between Broadway and Telegraph. You can join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement for a potluck and rallying meeting to be part of changing the world, building a real movement in Oakland in solidarity with African liberation. If you feel compelled by what you heard today about the white nationalist attacks from 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the African community and on the topic of reparations, you can be part of that. You can be part of reparations by participating in Uhuru Solidarity Movement in the Oakland
Oakland, San Francisco area, you can call 510-625-1106 tomorrow night, 7 p.m., February 4th at Humanist Hall is a potluck and rally. You can email uhurureparations@yahoo.com. In St. Petersburg, Florida, in the Tampa Bay area, you can contact the African People's Solidarity Committee there at stpete_office@APSCUhuru.org. That's St. Pete Office at APSCUhuru.org. Or call 727-824-5685. Or in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, we meet every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at 3733 Lancaster.